12:30, I'm Paul Dupuy on Star 97.7. Stu Marcoon is joining me, and don't worry, you didn't sleep through. It's not the next morning.
No. Glad to be with you again today.
Yes. Very interesting. So Star 97.7 is doing something a little different due to the time that we're in with the coronavirus. Lots of questions, lots of information. It's been a very interesting couple of weeks, to say the least.
And we have a couple of guests with us this afternoon via telephone.
That's right. We want to welcome Dr. Sheena Whitaker and Dr. Michael Murnick from Northern Light Health. They're going to be answering lots of questions that our listeners and even staff members have been asking, and we're looking forward to spending the next hour with the doctors, and hopefully we'll learn something and have a few more things, or have our ducks in a row, if you will, a little bit better. Good afternoon, doctors.
Hi, how are you
afternoon.
Doing?
We are well socially distanced.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yes, and a good point. Stu and I are in separate studios. We have the doctors that are in their own place, somewhere in the realms of Northern Light Health, so we're all practicing what we've been hearing. And to start right out, because we have a lot of questions, I thought it would be really appropriate. We got some questions this morning from a couple of young listeners, Kemper, who's age 10, Adelia, who's age 6. They're wondering, why are children not getting as sick as a lot of adults are?
That is an excellent question. You know, I think we're still learning a lot about coronavirus, so as we go, we'll have better answers for this in the future. One of the issues with coronavirus and the reason people get so sick is that actually their own body is attacking itself, the immune response. So we think that the older people have a longer immune memory and so therefore are having more problems with the immune response to it. That's one theory. It may also be that older people and people with other medical problems are more likely to have a harder time fighting it off. So it's kind of a combination of those factors that make it harder for older people to cope with this illness.
Excellent. And are there any differences of symptoms with children having this versus adults having the symptoms of COVID?
Right. We know everybody has cough. It usually is a drier cough coming from the lower lungs versus, say, a stuffy nose or postnasal drip getting down your throat. So we know it's cough. We know that it's fever, but not for everyone, and it can be sore throat. We think that a lot of the kids in China did not have as much of a stuffy nose, so we've been using that as kind of a distinguishing factor. Often the kids will only have what looks like, you know, a mild cold like you could get with other viruses. So I don't think there's a big difference between children and adults. It's just that adults or the elderly can go on to get pneumonia, viral pneumonia, and can then become very sick, having a hard time breathing. Children don't seem to go on to have that hard time breathing. They don't go on to needing to be hospitalized.
Okay. We had a question from Caitlin in Ellsworth, and she asked, the regular flu versus coronavirus, and how does one know if they're showing symptoms of flu or if it's the coronavirus?
Yeah, great question, and sort of follows up on what Sheena was just saying. There's an awful lot of overlap, which is why I think there's confusion. So the ways to tell them apart is, as Sheena said, there seems to be a lot less upper respiratory stuff, a lot less runny nose, watery eyes, which are traditionally part of what you look for with flu. They both have fever. They both have a cough. They both have tiredness. But with the COVID, we're not seeing as much of the runny nose and the runny, watery eyes.
And I think the other thing for kids to know, you know, when kids get a cold, they tend to get ear infections. We do not see ear infections with COVID or corona at all. So for most kids, they have a runny nose. They have ear pain. You can be pretty reassured that that is not COVID.
Probably the first time I'd be glad to have an ear infection.
Right, exactly. Yep.
No, even in the adults, we're seeing very little co-infection. If you have this, you don't have two other things as well. It's its own thing.
Okay. Frank from Penobscot asks, if somebody is recovering from a recent surgery, are there additional measures that the patient should be taking, and are cancer survivors more susceptible to the virus?
I can take that one. So if someone's recovered from a recent surgery, are there additional measures And not particularly, except I would just be extra careful with the measures we're recommending for everyone. Being really careful about washing your hands, and if anybody's taking care of you, that they're washing their hands and being very careful. But nothing special just with surgery. Cancer survivors and people dealing with cancer treatments in particular do seem to be more susceptible to this disease. So that's just based on early observations. And so it's hard to say anything hard and fast. But that is an observation. Something we're seeing is that cancer patients do seem to be hit harder by COVID-19.
I think in general we could say that all the things that are being recommended help the cancer patient, the post-surgical patient, children, adults. And you all know this probably by now, but remember it's the social distancing, 6 feet, wash your hands, cough into your elbow, try not to touch your face, which is difficult. All of these things help stopping spread COVID. It also helps with influenza and RSV and strep. Really, these are things that we should always be doing anyway. So I think just coming back to that, no matter who you are, I think that's the best you can try to do to help decrease the spread and keep yourself safe.
And that's something I was wondering, if there's any good to come out of this lengthy coronavirus, is just reminding us to be sanitary, to cover our mouths, to wash our hands a lot, because a lot of people don't do that. So maybe this is a really good reminder of moving forward how we should always be.
I agree. I think it's a great reminder. But I'd also want to remind people, especially, you know, the kids on the phone, that, you know, we have great immune systems in general. So we do come across a lot of things, and our immune systems are going to fight it off, and we're going to be okay. So, you know, we still, once COVID is over, we still should be going out to play with people and be going back to work once this is over and resuming normal activities. We are not sterile beings. We cannot be in bubbles. So, you know, washing our hands and coughing into our elbows, but once this is over, still going back out and being part of the world is also important.
Can I follow up on an answer that you gave earlier, Dr. Whitaker? You mentioned something about pneumonia being a big problem from this. Will a pneumonia vaccine help at all?
A vaccine against the COVID virus would help.
Yeah, well, we don't have one.
We don't have one, but that would help. We do have some vaccines that help with bacterial pneumonia, but this is a pneumonia that's coming from the virus.
I see.
Sometimes there's secondary bacterial pneumonia as well. And we have antibiotics for the bacterial pneumonias, but the viral pneumonia, we don't have a medication necessarily for it. They are, as you probably all know, working on a vaccine for the virus, just as we have vaccines for influenza and other illnesses. And that'll probably be our best solution to this issue, is developing antibodies and an immune system against COVID for future exposure.
Great. Thank you. Another listener question. Barry in Seal Cove asks, says he takes a prescription medication called Lisinopril HCTZ for high blood pressure. The HCTZ is one of the ingredients in the drug Plaquenil. Forgive me for mispronouncing it, probably. And he said he's heard it's been talked about as a virus remedy. Do you feel there's any added protection from the virus by taking his medicine?
I'm glad this came up, because this is, you know, a big question and there's a fair amount of confusion. So I'm happy that they take this one on. And there's really three parts to this answer, unfortunately. So the first thing is that HCTZ stands for hydrochlorothiazide, which is not the same thing as hydroxychloroquine, which is what you're hearing some buzz about as a potential treatment for this virus. So easy mistake to make. They're both really long, multi-syllable words. but HCTZ is not hydroxychloroquine, which is hydroxychloroquine is the ingredient in Plaquenil. It's also used to treat malaria and sometimes as a prophylaxis against malaria. And that has been shown, some observations in other places, that might help treat the virus. But we have no good studies to recommend it. It's very soft, but it's something people are trying. It's built into some of the treatment protocols, but it's really considered experimental at this time. And it's not being recommended as a prophylaxis, as a preventative thing for people to take. The second part of your question is the other medication, and the medication that the caller is taking, which is lisinopril, which is an ACE inhibitor. The virus does seem to attack the ACE2 receptor in the heart, and we are seeing some heart effects from the coronavirus with people that get really sick with it. And some people have said, well, should I stop taking my ACE inhibitor or my angiotensin receptor blocker like losartan or lisinopril, or should I keep taking it? Doctors all over the world looked at this and said, it really could go either way, so we recommend you keep taking your medication as you have. There's no signs it's protective or a danger at this point. So keep taking your lisinopril, keep taking your losartan, keep taking your HCTZ, but it's not going to treat the virus.
All right. If you just tuned in, we are talking with Dr. Sheena Whitaker and Dr. Michael Murnick from Northern Light Hospitals in Blue Hill and Maine Coast Hospital here in Ellsworth. We're stopping the music, and we've got lots of questions, and we'll continue with this next one from a listener in Hancock County. The question is there a test that can be done to see if someone had the virus before it became a national problem? My daughter was sick back at the end of December and the 1st of January with all of the symptoms of COVID-19, and we've heard that once you've had it and recovered, you won't get it again. So is this true?
Great question. I'm hearing a lot of talk about this now. Right now, we don't have available blood tests to check for immunity or if you've developed antibodies, what we'd call acute or convalescent sera tests for this disease. That's coming, but we don't have it yet, I'm sure it's been used in some study places, but we don't have a test to do that. We really don't think, but I'm hearing a lot of people think that, you know, that, hey, this was here last fall. I had a bad cough last fall. I don't think that's the case. I really think this virus is spreading across the world pretty fast, but it is probably in our communities more than we realize because a lot of people are going to have not much symptoms with it. A lot of people are going to get not too sick with it. And we haven't been able to test the way we wanted to. So there's a couple sides to that. But as far as figuring out if this is what you had back in December or January, we don't have that capability right now.
And I think in some ways it would be really nice to know, but on the other hand, we don't really need to know, right? We mostly want to do testing if it's going to change what we do. So either we're treating or we're intervening in some way, or we're isolating you so that you're not around others. If this child who was sick in December is now better, everybody around her is okay, then we know they're okay no matter what it was, COVID or otherwise.
And we don't know about immunity yet. I mean, people haven't had it for years. We're talking, you know, 6 months is all we know. There's some evidence that it will give you at least short-term immunity, but we don't know how long that'll last, if that'll something that'll only last a year or if it might last longer. So we just really don't know. We haven't been dealing with this virus as a pathogen for humans for long enough.
One of the things that has been circulating on the source of All That Must Be True, the better known as the internet, comes from Alice in Goldsboro. And my wife has read this to me a lot, too. Is there any validity that ibuprofen exacerbates these symptoms of coronavirus and can make someone actually sicker and lead to death if they take what we in the basketball officiating world call vitamin I when they have the virus? It's a lot of misinformation that seems to be out there.
Yeah, at this time, there's no definitive proof that ibuprofen worsens illness. Certainly, they're looking around the world to see why are some pockets of people doing worse. You know, is it lack of social distancing? Is it the genetic makeup of those people, the medication that was used, the age? There were some preliminary ideas that maybe ibuprofen was worsening the course of the illness, but we do not know this for sure. If you go to the CDC website, they do talk about this, and it is not recommended at this time that you necessarily avoid ibuprofen. You could certainly start with Tylenol and then, you know, use ibuprofen as needed. I will say, in talking about the internet, the CDC is really your best source of information. That's where we're all going as doctors, as administrators, for all our incident command decisions at the hospital. We go to the CDC website. They have all the best experts looking at this from around the world. They also have really timely information. So, you know, what could have been true 4 days ago about ibuprofen or anything else, we might now have more information about it and be able to give better recommendations. So almost anything Mike and I say today might not be true tomorrow or next week, and we would be, again, looking to the CDC for guidance, and I highly recommend that people go there for factual information and try not to look at the internet overall if you can. I think it only gives more worry to people and misinformation, as you said earlier, So please check out the CDC website. There's both the national site and the main site.
That's very good advice. And we have a link on our website at star977.com. If you click on cancellations, it's right there at the top, a link to the CDC.
That's perfect.
Moving on with a question from Bucksport. We've seen a white tent set up outside of Maine Coast Hospital. What exactly is that for, and is anybody actually using it?
Right, good question. So all the hospitals of Northern Light have set up tents. There's also one here at Blue Hill. We've set them up for a few different reasons. It started as a swabbing tent to swab and test for COVID. We are now using it more so for medical evaluation of patients. And the reason for setting up the tents is so that we can consolidate and isolate patients with possible COVID. And rather than having all of our clinics and all of our points of entry exposed to possible COVID, we isolate it to the tent itself. That way we can use less PPE or personal protective equipment. As you've all probably heard, we're trying to be sure that we can conserve our masks, our gowns, our gloves, so that we can use them for the sick with COVID, and we can use them in the future if we have more COVID patients coming. So by keeping the possible patients with COVID to the tent, we only have a few people using the PPE or personal protective equipment, and we can be very efficient in our care of those patients. I stated that earlier we were using them for swabbing. Now we are only testing certain patients for COVID or certain people for COVID. So right now we're using it more for medical evaluation. So patients with a fever and a cough, rather than going to any of the clinics, they're told to go to the tent. And we have providers, nurses, MAs, patient registration people there to evaluate the patients and either reassure that they can go home and be cared for at home, or are they serious enough that they should go to the ED, the emergency department, and be evaluated for possible admission. So almost think of it like a little outposting of our clinics at this point. Now, in the future, if our emergency department should become really full and overflowing, we might actually use them as a little mini ED as well, and we might have IV fluids there and other machinery and other treatments that we could do in the tent. So we're being somewhat fluid and flexible with the use of tents, and it could change in the future.
Yeah, so I would agree. That's basically what we're doing in Blue Hill. Started as a remote testing site, sort of an outreach from the lab. Now it's an outreach from the outpatient clinics and sort of a forward triage tent, so we can assess people without bringing them into our buildings or using PPE, as Sheena said. And they could become extensions if we need them, but right now that's how we're using them.
I've not had the occasion to drive to the hospital, which is probably a good thing. So when you pull into the parking lot, does somebody direct you right directly to the tent, or where do you go?
Right. As you, there's one thing is to call ahead of time. In general, we want you to call ahead of time, whether you're headed to our lab, our radiology, our ED. If you think that you might have COVID or corona, please call ahead so that we're prepared when you arrive, so that we can have on PPE, have a mask ready for you. So in general, we'd like you to call ahead. But if you are thinking about going to the tent, whether that be for swabbing or to be medically evaluated, we have a number for you to call. It's an 800 number. It's 844-489-1822. I'll say that number again, but remember, this is the number to call if you think that you need to be evaluated for COVID, whether it's with a swab or medically evaluated. And you will talk with an RN who will talk through, do you need the tent? Is it safer for you to stay at home? Should you, in fact, go to the emergency department? So that number again is 844-489-1822.